Welcome to Audio Notes. I'm David Finkel, Artistic Director of Music at Menlo. Along with Artistic Co-Director Wu Han, Artistic Administrator Patrick Castillo, and some of this season's festival artists, it is my pleasure to introduce you to Music at Menlo's 2010 season, Maps and Legends. In 2004, the festival's second season, we embarked on a musical odyssey with stops in five singular musical regions. This season, we expand on that journey to explore music from a spectrum of remarkable times and places, from the rich musical traditions of Vienna, England, and Spain, to Dvorak's America, 1920s Paris, and beyond. Maps and Legends will offer listeners many layers of context in which to engage with a broad spectrum of great music. This season's audio notes are designed to illuminate some of these layers. Over the course of this summer's concerts, encounters, and other festival events, we'll only continue to discover more of the innumerable connections that make the chamber music literature so rich. One of the many exceptional qualities that music has demonstrated throughout history is its capacity to act as an agent of cross-cultural exchange. This first installment of Audio Notes 2010 takes us through three of this summer's programs which demonstrate this phenomenon in different ways. Concert Program 1, The Seasons, pairs two composers who occupy vastly different worlds, the Italian Baroque and the modern American avant-garde, but whose music finds common inspiration in nature and the changing of the seasons. This summer's sixth concert program, Spanish Inspirations, looks at the influence that Spain's composers had on their counterparts elsewhere throughout Europe during the early 20th century. Finally, the season ends in Dvorak's America, where we'll hear the folk songs and spirituals that the Czech romantic Antonín Dvořák discovered upon traveling to the United States in 1892, as well as two of his own signature chamber works inspired by the tunes that he heard.
The festival season begins in Venice nearly 300 years ago with the music of Antonio Vivaldi. Vivaldi was indisputably the single greatest Italian composer of the Baroque period, as well as one of its most gifted violinists. His influence and reputation among his contemporaries is difficult to overstate. His innovations in instrumental writing, violin technique, and most importantly, the Baroque concerto form, which we'll discuss more in a moment, these contributions define much of what we identify today as Baroque music. In 1725, Vivaldi published Il Cimento dell'Armonia e dell'Invenzione, or The Contest Between Harmony and Invention. This was a set of 12 violin concertos, the first four of which were entitled Spring, Summer, Autumn, and Winter. Taken together, these four concertos, the four seasons, have emerged as Vivaldi's most enduring work and represents a cornerstone of the Baroque literature. Violinist Aaron Keefe.
Vivaldi was one of the greatest Italian Baroque composers. He wrote hundreds of concertos, and many of them were for violin, since he was a violinist himself. He was a great innovator in the development of the Baroque concerto, and The Four Seasons is a quintessential example of that. He writes very brilliantly for the violin. It's very virtuosic writing, and it's really fun to play.
Vivaldi's 500-odd contributions to the Baroque concerto genre, many of which showcased his own virtuosity as a violinist, essentially defined the concept of the concerto as a dialogue between soloist and ensemble. He was also among the first composers, and certainly the earliest significant one, to make certain formal ideas standard concerto fare, things like the fast-slow-fast three-movement format and ritornello form, in which a refrain stated by the full ensemble alternates with rhapsodic solo passages. These elements in Vivaldi's music served as a model for a whole generation of composers. But more than anything else, what we hear in works like The Four Seasons, and in the breadth of its dramatic character, is the extent of Vivaldi's vision in imagining the expressive potential of the concerto form.
The Seasons is a special work. I think is probably his most famous piece. It's some of the most famous music written, period. I mean, everybody knows The Four Seasons of Vivaldi.
Violinist Philip Setzer.
Probably people don't know how many hundreds of other concerti just for violin solo that he wrote. But this is special, obviously, because of the story that it tells.
It's written in four parts. There's three movements within each season. The movements are always fast, slow, fast. And he actually wrote sonnets to each of the concertos. So he really specified the feeling of the piece. And it's amazing how each movement really represents the character that he was going for, the mood that he wanted.
The music of The Four Seasons was partly inspired by a set of four sonnets, one each about spring, summer, fall, and winter. Actually, the authorship of these sonnets isn't known for sure, but historians agree that Vivaldi in all likelihood wrote them himself. Each sonnet comprises three distinct sections, which correspond neatly to the three movements of each concerto.
And the music really follows very closely, almost to a line, the words of the poem. This particular one that I'm going to be playing is Autumn.
Just to explain, when we present The Four Seasons this summer at Music at Menlo, each of the four concerti will feature a different soloist. In addition to Aaron Keefe, who will be the soloist for Spring, and Philip Setzer, who will play the solo part in Autumn, we'll hear Ani Kavafian as soloist in the Summer Concerto, and Ian Swenson in Winter.
This particular one that I'm going to be playing is Autumn, and the poem starts, "The peasant celebrates in dance and song the sweet pleasure of the rich harvest, and fired by Bacchus's liquor, many end their enjoyment in slumber." Well, that's actually the whole first movement right there. four lines. The piece opens with what I think, it's a celebration, it's a dance, they're peasants. I think it's a kind of a harmonium, organ-like. It has that kind of quality to it. I think he was really imitating the folk instruments of the country, in the country. And then, of course, what's really fun about this one, which is why I wanted to do it, not because I like to drink that much, but because there's a great deal of humor in this piece. And he writes in, after that opening, the violin comes in with what's really kind of tipsy music. It's a little bit off balance. It's like somebody who's had a little bit too much to drink, trying to tell a story and kind of slurring his words and kind of a little off balance. And you hear this through a lot of this first movement. It's really a musical depiction of drunkenness, so it's kind of fun to do. The last movement is called The Hunt, and here again we have these peasant rhythms and sort of the sounds of the call to the hunt. Bom, 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 the horns. It's all strings, but it's imitating the sound of horns. This time the violin, it's interesting, the violin plays really two roles. It plays the part of the hunter in being, strong and going out and chasing after this poor animal. But the the violin also plays the part of the animal that's being chased. So that's kind of interesting, too, where I actually take on two roles here.
And how is that depicted in the music?
The titles are actually in the music, what he wants. So in the first part, the poem is, "At the new dawn, the hunters set out on the hunt with horns, guns, and dogs." And then the next line, which is "my next entrance," is "the wild beast flees and they follow its track." So in the score, he actually writes "the wild beast flees." And Already bewildered and wearied by the great noise of the guns and dogs, wounded, it threatens weakly to escape, but overwhelmed, dies. So it's really very carefully written out, not just the fleeing part of it and the frightened part of it and the dashing away, but also from the orchestra, we have the actual writing in of the guns. You know, they play like that, so everybody's shooting. And I'm going, and then they go, you know, like this. And then I go, so that goes back and forth. Then the gunshots stop, and I kind of teeter, I kind of, as the music shows, try to stand up again and then fall. And then the last part of it is rejoicing, you know, because people are going to get to eat. So, and you could just see this as a scene, as a painting from that time of peasants and the hunt and, you know, the whole festivities around that. It really captures musically an experience from that time that is in some ways even better than a painting, because it's all in your imagination as you're hearing the music. It's a remarkable piece, and it not only set a certain standard in terms of writing for the violin, but the whole idea of writing a programmatic piece in the clothes of a violin concerto or a series of violin concerti is incredibly inventive and just a great idea.
The second half of our season opening program features George Crumb's Music for a Summer Evening. The work was composed in 1974 and is scored for two amplified pianos and two percussionists playing a psychedelic array of percussion instruments. David and I are tremendously excited to have the opportunity to present this extraordinary piece of music at the festival. We have specially chosen Music for a Summer Evening to mark the introduction of the Center for Performing Arts at Menlo Atherton, Music at Menlo's newest performance venue. Born in Charleston, West Virginia in 1929, George Crumb first rose to prominence in the 1960s, becoming possibly the most widely performed American composer by the mid-1980s. Crumb largely made his reputation as a great innovator of extended instrumental techniques. Music for a Summer Evening displays in abundance Crumb's endlessly imaginative approach to sonority and instrumental timbre.
Pianist Gilbert Kalish.
So George Crumb is quite unique, coming from Appalachia, from West Virginia. I don't think anybody can deny that that kind of environment had a strong effect on him, that he grew up hearing folk instruments, hearing the music of that place, and somehow that so stirred his imagination for sound that became really what he did with sound, what he did with his music.
Thank you.
Music for a Summer Evening serves on the program as a kind of foil to Vivaldi's Four Seasons. The work's evocative title reflects the ethereal sound world conjured by Crumb's imaginative use of the pianos and percussion instruments.
He uses the piano as nobody else does, so there's a lot of use of the inside of the piano, strumming and plucking and other more esoteric kinds of things, using implements in the piano to make glissandi, and of course playing harmonics. And in one of the movements there, you can use newspaper or thin paper. It makes a kind of interference in the sound. You hear kind of clatter of the paper bouncing up and down on the string. I mean, the kinds of effects he uses are endless and unique and incredibly imaginative, and it's a real part of who he is, and what he hears is imagination.
Percussionist Ayano Kataoka.
And also for the percussion, we get like every single percussion instrument that you can think of, like vibraphone, xylophone, and chime, all the different small triangle, and it's just so that all different kind of timbre. We use like a Chinese temple bowl. Yeah, small ones that putting on the timpani and use a pedal to change the pitch. Yeah, so that the bowl sounds get whoa, whoa, whoa. You know. Well, we have slide whistle playing into the strings in the piano, so that we get some resonate sound from piano. So that's also, yeah, very interesting and unique instrument.
Well, this is a very extravagant work. It has a large battery of percussion, which is very characteristic of some of George Crumb's music. Very exotic sounds on the piano, but also very big sounds. Also very kind of touching music, very intimate and touching and homegrown, you know, the opposite of symphonic, like he invented the sounds. And it ends in a kind of a hypnotic coming down of all of the immense sounds of it, celebration of sound. It's an abstract piece. It doesn't have a programmatic element, but it's a kind of exploration of sound worlds.